Today we're going to be talking about cravings. And the takeaway, my hope is that you hear something to inspire you or to give you the aha that you can overcome things that have been bugging you and actually have success. I don't want the New Year's resolution thing to repeat, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, how is this, why is this having this kind of impact on me? Now, some of the obvious ones are obviously alcohol, drugs, pornography, prostitute, fill in the blank. Those are the bodily urges that we crave. But the point is, they ultimately root spiritually and psychologically in the way in which we are fearfully and wonderfully made. I want to welcome back my friend, Dr. Jim Wilder, clinical psychologist, executive director of the Shepherd's House Christian Counseling Center, where for years he has been specializing in dealing with those that have experienced trauma and addictions. And so he's got a lot of expertise in this. He's also, here's a term, a neurotheologian, which means it's the nexus of the latest developments in brain science and how the brain actually works with biblical wisdom. And it's great to have him back. So, Dr. Jim, how are you, buddy?
All right. It's good to be with you here this morning.
So let's talk about cravings and what I was saying regarding the idea that we fill ourselves with other things that are not, well, it's because we're lacking in relationships.
Well, that's exactly right. The part of the brain that's really responds to sugar and alcohol and drugs and cocaine and all those other sorts of things, the joy and pleasure center right in the brain, was designed originally to respond to relationships. So we're kind of wired looking for something that's going to make us feel good. Only it turns out that the people in our lives usually don't make us feel good, at least not reliably. So if I go and get a chocolate bar, I know that I'm going to feel good. I mean, it's always going to taste the same. I've got it under control. Okay. If I go to talk to my mom or my sister or my friend, I don't know how they're going to respond to me. I don't know if I'm going to get that joy bounce back. You know, are they going to be glad to be with me, really? And so we find very easy that it's you can substitute other things for your joy buzz, you see. And the chemicals actually go in, and they give that center a bigger boost than joy would by itself. So if you put cocaine up your nose, it gives your whole nervous system a much bigger rush than a smile will.
Okay.
So interestingly enough, though, if you are actually haven't been traumatized, you're sort of immune to cocaine. And there's a study that was done with
really?
Monkeys. Yeah. Where they studied traumatized monkeys and non-traumatized monkeys. And the traumatized monkeys were immediately start using cocaine, where the ones that hadn't been traumatized were resistant to it. And even when they forced the monkeys to take cocaine, they still didn't get hooked nearly as fast as the ones that that you know had no joy in their life.
Okay, so is it fair to say that based upon the research, those that have, quote, been damaged, and I'll put that in quotes, mm-hmm. those that have been damaged are more susceptible to various addictions and cravings?
Yes, that's clearly the case. The same damage that trauma does to your brain is the same thing that addictions work on. In fact, a more interesting study yet came out of Georgia, where they were looking at children who had a DNA, already built in biological proclivity to getting addicted. And so they looked at these kids that were sort of looked like they were destined to be addicted, and they looked at the kind of parenting they had. And the ones that had really good, kind of joyful parenting, none of them developed the neurological expected addiction patterns.
Really?
Yeah. So having just enough joy in your life keeps you from activating even the stuff that might genetically be in there. And we think of genetic as being sort of predetermined, but
right.
No, genetics even need to be activated. And so when you've got someone who is close to you, giving you the kind of joy you want, you'll find that you've built in this kind of resistance to people. And you even think about it yourself. On the days that you're kind of craving things,
yeah.
they're not the good relationship days. They're not the days when there's people around, there's joy and stuff happening. It's when you're sitting around and you know you're there in your car by yourself and you're just kind of punching the button going from one radio station to another or,
yes.
you know, stuff like that. Till you finally hit on the Pastore show and then, you know,
right.
it's all fulfilled for you right there. But
one of the ahas, Jim, on this is, okay, the way in which we were parented, our experience as children, has a lot to do with our susceptibility, our vulnerability to addictions.
Yes, it does.
And so those that are trapped in sex addiction, or let's just call it addiction, which is dealing with everything from sex to the body stuff, to alcohol, to drugs, to what foods, overeating, whatever it is, that can all be traced back to our childhood development and the lacking of this joy buzz that you were talking about. So can you, if you talk to people who have a lot of successful, fulfilling relationships, they are far less likely to be involved in addictive behavior then.
Yeah, that's exactly
right.
So if you've got the relationships, you've got the source of joy, you really aren't looking for something else to fulfill you. And if you get the other stuff, it feels kind of weird to you. It's like that's, you know, that's too intense. It doesn't, you know, you ever had a sugar drink and you used to like it when you were a teenager, but you
yes.
went back and tried it now and you went, man, ooh, I can't, that's like syrup. I can't stand it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of how the addictive stuff tastes to you if you actually have joyful relationships in your life. But if you're missing those and you, you know, you kind of drift into the zone where you're in a low joy state for a while, and then something comes along and it kind of gives you that little buzz, you know, that's the thing that, that kind of starts growing, makes you get stuck. You know, so it might be a store you go to and the clerk smiles at you and you want to go back again. Or it could just be, a sugar product that you ate, you know, that tasted just right. Or, you know, in a lot of ways we go about justifying our cravings to each other. If you ever noticed about advertising, it's a lot of that is just designed to justify whatever craving you have. So I don't just crave any old chocolate. I just crave the finest of this or that.
Of course.
I don't crave any old beer. I crave this one, which has got all of the, you know, whatever it is. And every advertising sort of panders to whatever craving it is that to make it look good. You know, dress up your craving, and it's reliable. You can always get whatever it is. It'll always taste the same. It'll always look the same. Come to our store. You'll be the best dressed, whatever it is. And get it on sale on top of that, you know.
Well, and again, I'm not bashing on the companies, but that's basic marketing because it works. I mean, the reason they have those ads is because they are effective. It's like negative campaigning.
Well,
it works, you know what I mean? So for the person that is addicted or is involved in cravings a lot who are listening right now, Jim, would your advice be think back to the harmful relationships, the toxic relationships that you've had, or would it be something else?
Well, yeah, if you think back on them, you're going to get more depressed and you'll really get your cravings acting up. So you really have to work on quieting yourself, being able to look at where am I going to find some joy in my life? That's why, you know, most of my ministry and focus of what I've developed over the last 15 or 20 years has been how do we build joy in people's life? Because when you think about it, the way we got here was because of how my life is already, right?
So right.
If I'm low joy, how am I going to get more joy? But the simple thing is that since most people have never thought, how do I get more joy? They don't actually look for it. You know, they're often thinking about how do I get more shopping? How do I get get to stop by and get some extra coffee? How do I do all these things that I crave?
Right.
We plan that all the time. You know, if we put as much planning into getting joy and finding that as we do into finding the other things we crave, you can actually improve your yield an awful lot in a day. And that's one of the simplest things. Think about the people that bring you joy in your day.
Right.
How do you get three or four times as much contact with them? How do you call them more often? How do you stop by to see them more? How do you improve the number of joyful interactions that you have? And that's a big part of dealing with this craving. And as we'll talk about later, how do you get those kind of joyful interactions with God? Because it turns out God is also there willing to have a joyful interaction with you when you go looking for him.
So, Dr. Wilder, you've been a clinical psychologist now for like 40-something years. In your experience in dealing with all of these patients who have experienced trauma and addictions, the path to recovery is always the joy to return back to the joy. I mean, if just anyone listening to you, you use the word joy more than anyone I know. And it must be because it's so central in our therapy and our mental, emotional, spiritual health. We've got to, quote, return to joy, follow the joy path, be in those relationships that bring us joy. And if we don't have those relationships, or if we have an empty joy tank, we're going to try to stuff it with all this other crud.
And we used to just basically hospitalize all of the people that came in with some kind of severe trauma. You know, some point during their treatment, they just kind of wore out and, we had to put them in the hospital for a while. when we discovered joy and started building their joy, the hospitalization rate dropped practically to zero. So
wow.
People were getting, you know, they're getting refreshed. They're getting built up. I mean, when you think about it, joy is really what you wanted to have to begin with. I mean,
all right,
that's
so
what you crave.
I got to do a break here in a second. But if someone comes into your office, and of course it's difficult to generalize, but if someone comes in and they're involved in either a trauma or an addiction, right? Your job then, as you see it, based upon all your experience, is, okay, I got to get them back to, quote, return to joy, right?
That's it, yeah.
See that, and if they can find out, okay, when did I separate from joy, what brought me joy, what used to bring me joy and no longer does, and just sort of think through this, is there an aha moment that happens for the counselee, you know, for the patient to realize, wow, I have been self-inflicting a lot of this stuff, and there is a way out of this?
Yeah, there tends to be an aha moment when you realize that joy is lacking in your life and that it would be possible. See, most people have come to the conclusion that, you know, this is just my life. It just, my life is rotten and I'm,
right.
You know, it's not going to get any better than this, so I might as well get buzzed. So when you start singing, here's joy, here's what it will do for you, and the first time that you actually experience a little bit of it, you know, where you actually can feel it inside, you start thinking, yeah, that might be good. But, you know, you're going to have to retrain your brain as hard as you abused it, is the other side of it. So it's really nice to have an aha moment that kind of turns you around. But you're also going to have to do some serious joy building in your life if you're going to get your brain back to running the way it was supposed to,
and
which is what we've spent most of our last 15 or 20 years.
Well, and Dr. Wilder, that's what I want to do this hour that we're together, is to talk about how to rebuild that joy. And we will do so as we continue straight ahead with Dr. Jim Wilder right here at the intersection of faith and reason. Yeah, it's one of those aha things that, well, it's really changed counseling. I mean, the way that you used to deal with addictions and addictive behavior, quote, in the past, is so old school and wildly ineffective compared to what we now know is the source of the addictive behavior. It's a lack of joy in your life. And we're talking with Dr. Jim. By the way, welcome back to the Frank Pastore Show. We're talking with Dr. Jim Wilder, clinical psychologist and executive director of the Shepherd's House Christian Counseling Center, right? And by the way, lest I forget, there's the Heart and Soul Conference coming up at La Cañada Presbyterian Church at the end of June, June 27th through the 29th. And there's a very special dinner on the night of June 28th, on Thursday night. I'll be emceeing, and it's really honoring Dallas Willard and his wife, Jane, and Jane Willard played a key role as one of the supervisors over Jim Wilder when Dr. Wilder was first starting. And Jim, before we welcome on Ed Corey, sort of lay out what the old school model for dealing with those involved in harmful addictive behaviors used to be. And then according to you, Ed Corey really rocked the world on counseling and how we view addictive behaviors and the addictive therapy. He really changed everything with what he called BEEPs. And I want to get to that. But what was the old school model like?
Well, really, the focus of the old school model was on the problem and on the addiction. If you could just get someone to admit that they had a problem, they had an addiction, that became their more or less their identity from that point on through treatment. You just were focused on what, here's the problem, how we're going to contain, how we're going to deal with it. And really, that's very important. If you don't admit there's a problem, you're going to kill yourself with
sure.
almost every addiction. So, but unfortunately, that only tends to yield about a 20% recovery rate, even in the best programs that are focused on that. And you can only focus on one problem at a time. And it turns out almost everybody who's got addictions has got more than one.
Okay.
So if you're addicted to alcohol, you're almost always also addicted to sex. If you're addicted to cocaine, you're almost addicted to sex, and you're addicted to a whole variety of other things. And when people got off of their alcohol addictions, then you found them spending the day sitting around smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee and all these other things that kept their brains pretty well shut off. So Ed really came around with a term and an understanding of how you get cross addictions. How do these all things work together? And he came up with this acronym called BEEPS, which let you move away from just getting focused on the problem to saying, I've got a lot of them, but what I really need to do is get back to building my joy, something that, that the beeps are taking away from me.
Well, see, and the thing that I'm blown away by, and I want everyone to sort of get, is it all reduces down to joy, our relationship with God, our ability to overcome wounds, a trauma, addictive behavior. It's to realize the key role that joy has in our life, that we were made and created for joy. So, Ed Corey, welcome to the Frank Pastore Show. Dr. Wilder speaks very highly of you, sir. How are you doing?
I am doing great, and I'm really glad to be with you.
So lay this out. What is this beeps thing, like beep, beep, you know, the horn? That's the acronym, B-E-E-P-S. Ed, Jim Wilder says that you'd completely change the whole addictive therapy model because of what you've discovered. So what you find?
Well, what I found out is basically just about every addiction that you can think of affects the same area of the brain, and it's the same area of the brain that's designed to help us feel joy and pleasure when people are glad to be with us. Everything kind of centers around that part of the control center in the right hemisphere of the brain. So whether you're talking about food, sex, alcohol, drugs, codependency, it all comes down to the same region of the brain. And when I began to understand that, I started to realize there's a common denominator in all this. So BEEPS really stands for behaviors, events, experiences, people, or substances that that part of our brain attaches to instead of genuine joyful relationships with God and other people.
All right, so how did this change the way in which you do counseling or the way that people approach counseling, those that are involved in addictions?
Well, the old model used to be, like Jim was saying, that you really had to kind of you had to confront people and slam their denial about having a problem or having an addiction. And generally, because I worked in residential treatment a lot, generally when that happened, either they'd get so afraid that they would comply or they'd leave. And their motive was fear. It was not joy. It's the old model. If you can imagine driving forward in your car and looking in your rearview mirror to go forward, It's like driving looking backwards. That's a lot of what addiction treatment used to be like. If you understand BEEPS and what the brain actually needs, BEEPS are the brain's way of kind of substituting pseudo joy or artificial joy for what God actually designed it to have.
Now, Dr. Wilder, what earlier you had said that, you know, if they leave one addiction, they often get involved in another addiction, and they can spend their time drinking coffee all day or smoking cigarettes or whatever, and it turns their relational circuits off. So if people are involved in these addictive behaviors, are they less likely to be open to having meaningful relationships?
Yes, it turns out that the attachment center will actually be taken over, sort of hijacked by the beeps. It's very interesting how you are designed to respond to people and to faces. But the more you've been involved with beeps, whatever they might be, whether it's, again, you know, we think about heroin or something like that. But, you know, it could be shopping or shoes or buying lingerie or whatever it is that you're into. That starts taking over your center so that your brain actually responds with more joy about your beeps than it does to people. It just takes it over, and then, you know, people start to feel pretty pale by comparison to the beeps. So they're very jealous lovers, as Ed calls them.
All right, so the beeps are behavior, events, experiences, person, or substances. And a person that's involved in that a lot is less likely to be open to having meaningful relationships.
Absolutely.
And so when you sit down, let's say that I was your counselee, and let's say that I drink too much, then is your general path going to be, okay, I would think the old school would be, why are you drinking so much? And help me to realize that. And it's because I'm empty or lacking in joy. And if I can find a way to restore that joy in my life, I'm going to be less desiring to get involved in alcohol.
Right. And the first spot is we got to convince you to stop drinking and be sober long enough to actually start building some joy in your life to try to, you know, substitute some things like that. But immediately, we've got the Thriving Recover Your Life, put people in groups with groups of other people where they practice. Every week, you know, you come in and you practice joy. You actually build joy with other people. It's an exercise just like you'd work out if you're going to work out physically.
You can do joy exercises?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Give me one as an example.
Well, let's see. The first thing that we would do is to help people remember something they appreciate or like, right?
Okay.
So then you tell somebody else the thing you appreciate or like. And when you're telling them, you're looking at them in the eye, they're going to start smiling back at you.
Right.
And as you smile back and forth, and you've got people in groups of three or four people, five people at a time, smiling back and forth, all of a sudden you feel that joy starting to build up inside because it's getting triggered. It's starting to run again, you know.
Now, just as you're saying, no, this is great because I think everybody can tap into this. When, I'll give you an example. When I'm with my writing buddies, and we start telling common stories of experiences that we've had, we all light up and we start smiling and we start recalling the events and being happy, and it's just an infectious kind of thing. You're saying, okay, that's the joy, and we're going to rekindle that again for these people in the small groups and begin with something that you appreciate.
Right, and we actually teach them how to tell what we call 4+ stories. How do you tell a story so that your face and your body and your voice, everything's into what you're talking about? You're really expressing it instead of just sitting back deadpan, you know, you're telling a story. But you really get into whatever it is. And if you convey it that way, you can tell joy stories to each other and appreciation stories, and they sort of have this kindling effect. You know, they just start the next person going, oh, yeah, I've got one like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, that's a blast.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is.
Okay, so this is the joy stuff. I got to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with Dr. Jim Wilder and Ed Corey. And by the way, that Heart and Soul Conference is coming up at the end of June. You can get more information at the website, joy2thrive.com. And by the way, all the stuff that we're talking about today, that Ed Corey, his little piece on BEEPS, which is an acronym standing for behavior, event, experience, person, and substance, and the role that joy plays, is available for a free download. Just go to joy2thrive.com, click on the Heard It on the Pastore Show banner there at the bottom of the homepage, and it's free, and you can download it. Quick break. We'll continue with Jim and Ed straight ahead with a lot of joy. You guys were listening in there, I could tell. Sugar, sugar, come on. I love it. Welcome back to the Frank Pastore Show. And, all right, inside baseball joke, right? So producer JJ and engineer Chan are listening as Dr. Wilder and I are talking in the studio. I just literally finished like a bowl of M&M chocolate-covered peanuts, you know? And I have those every day during the show. And Jim was teasing me about the sugar just kicked in, and they fire off with sugar, sugar. Very nice, guys. Thank you so much. But Jim, that's a wonderful picture of what you were just telling me off air, and I want to make sure people sort of get this. The point is that addictive behavior, cravings that we have, are rooted in a lack of joy. And we have got involved in behaviors with, like, the M&Ms or whatever it would be, booze, drugs, sex, it's fill in the blank. And it comes from a lack of fulfilling relationships that bring us joy. And then pretty soon we do that so long, that becomes our new pattern. That becomes our new normal. So when you're helping, dealing with a patient, it's to help them recognize, okay, when these cravings occur, I mean, you'd love to be there and say, okay, what are you thinking now? What are you feeling right now? Where are your relationships? And get them talking about those, because then you can have some hope in actually addressing the addiction. So let's say that right now I told you, okay, I'm really craving some chocolate. What would you want me to do, Jim?
Okay, the first thing that I would want you to do is the thing you've already done. You noticed that you were craving. The fact is that most of the time people don't actually notice that they're craving. They're surfing, like I said, or they're punching radio buttons and they just hit here, or they're just thinking to themselves, I wonder where I could, you know, stop and get whatever it is I want to have.
Okay.
So if you notice it, then you can actually say to yourself, I've got a craving here. This is when I start eating too much, this is when I overeat, this is when I, you know, switch on the computer and start looking to see if I can't find something out there. Whatever it is that you do, when you notice that, that's when the question would logically come up, can I find some joy with people? But what you'll find is that almost everybody has their relational circuits off right then. So even if you could think of people, it's like, who cares? The cravings are there because your relational circuits have gone off, and and so the first thing you have to do is quiet yourself and get to a place where you actually can start tasting the joy of relationship again and get back to some kind of relational connection. That's why on that Heard on the Pastores Show link, we've got the link right there to Shalom My Body. The first thing that Ed and I developed together actually was this pattern for how do you quiet yourself and turn that from quieting to talking to God about what's going on to help him to, you know, guide you to the relationships of the people you have in your life and to kind of activate the appreciation that you have in your life. We actually have people keep track of their appreciation experiences, make a little
really
logbook. Yeah, write down, give your appreciation experience a name, right? What is it you like? Give it a name and make a list of those things. And then when you can't feel it, you know, then go back and look on the list and go, oh, yeah, that's, I remember that one now, you know. So, you know, just thinking about, you know, this morning when the sun first broke through in the yard and all that sort of stuff, if I sat
right
and appreciated that, I could give that a name and say, morning sun. Then later on when my relational circuits are off and I want to get my joy back, I go back, oh, let's remember the morning sun, yeah. When I remember that, then I remember, oh, I want to go in and tell my wife that, oh, yeah, hey, look at the backyard. It looks really nice now, and I'm back in that relational mode again.
Okay, so this is really key. Ed Curry, when it comes to appreciation and joy, there is an intimate relationship between those that, like Dr. Wilder was just saying, unless you can go to that appreciation place, you can't even begin to enter into relationships. So you've got to have that appreciation first before your relational circuits are even turned on. Is that right?
That's a big part of it. Appreciation is probably the easiest way to get your relational circuits on. But the really important thing that Jim mentioned about the Shalom for My Body exercise is that there's some physical movements you can do that can actually kickstart the front part of your brain to help you stop craving so intensely.
Really?
Yeah, it's hugely exciting because one of the things that happens is the longer we crave and our relational circuits switch off, activity starts to decrease in the front part of the brain, which is where we need it to handle cravings, and it starts to shift more towards the back. Well, we teach people how to notice when that's happening. I mean, just there's a long list and there's a really short list of about 6 questions that can help you know at any given moment what part of your brain's working right now.
Really? Do you know those off the top of your head?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, with both you and Jim here, I'm thinking we could go through that. So,
and
for
right on the past, heard it on the Past Stories Show link too for people who want to follow along.
In fact, I have my relational checklist. Circuits checklist card right here in my wallet. I can tell you exactly what the questions are.
All right, because I want everyone listening and on the podcast, obviously, to sort of go through this. Because your guy's point, and again, if I say this wrong, Jim, you got to correct me. But unless you can sense appreciation, you cannot enter into relationship because your relationship circuits, your relational circuits are off. So
right.
The first thing is, I've got to get, no matter how wounded the individual is, I've got to get them to appreciate something. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start there. And then from appreciation, we're going to get the relational circuits back on. And now we can start refilling that joy tank and hopefully get them aware that all of this addictive behavior and things that often come in clusters, it's rooted in a lack of joy in their life. So it all roots in appreciation. So, Ed, let's go down those questions because I think people listening right now, especially if they're frustrated and traffic out on the 405, would like to know, okay, how can I return to joy?
All right, here's the 6 questions. If you answer yes to any of these, it's a good indicator that your relational circuits are not working as well as you'd like, and you need to start thinking about something you appreciate.
Okay.
Okay, here come the questions. The first one is, I just want to make a problem, person, or feeling go away. If people are sitting there and they just want to make the driver in front of them go away and disappear, probably their brains are not as relational as what they'd like it to be.
Okay.
If someone doesn't want to listen to what others feel or say, their relational circuits may not be working well. If my mind is locked onto something really upsetting, you know, that stupid thing I said today that I just feel bad about and it's running over and over and over in my mind, or that thing that somebody else said to you, or that thing that happened. If those kind of things are just running around my head, my relational circuits aren't working real well.
Okay.
If there's somebody I usually like being connected to, say my wife or a guy like Jim, if I just don't in any way, shape, or form want to be connected with them, there's something non-relational about the way I am right then. If I just want to get away, fight, or freeze, then I'm probably not being very relational. And this last one's interesting because in this last one, I'm actually engaging with people, but it's to interrogate, judge, or fix them, mostly to show them that they're stupid and I'm correct. So if any of those things are true, it's a good indication that the front part of my brain, my relational circuits, are not working really well, and there's too much activity in the back part of my brain. And the cool thing about this list is, if I know that I have a beefs issue, it's really very difficult for me to continue craving if my relational circuits are working well, because if they're working, then I can connect with God and others in ways that are joyful. So I kind of look at this checklist and how we get the front part of the brain working again as kind of one of the first lines of defense against cravings getting out of control.
All right, so if someone, I got to do a break here, Ed, in a second, but if someone heard those questions, and they can download them and access them at joytothrive.com, just click on the Heard It on the Pastore Show link at the bottom. But if they answer, yep, that's me right now, how do you get out of it?
Well, the short answer is, if I was working with you,
yeah,
I would have you make a whole list of things that you appreciate, and I would have you spend time meditating on those, thinking about those things, because the longer you think about those things, you start a chemical process in your brain to where you can actually feel what you felt in the moment that you first appreciated that thing.
Really?
Absolutely. It's just like trauma. If you think about something that's sad, you start to feel all those same old feelings. Well, appreciation is the same way. I mean, God designed the brain to do incredibly awesome things. If you read the Psalms, David did the exact same thing when he was having a bad day.
All right, so I'm thinking, I got to do a break here, but as you just said that, things that I really appreciate, I'm thinking my wife, my grandson, my son and my daughter, sunrise in Yosemite, riding through the Mojave Desert at 6 a.m. on my motorcycle, an animal from In-N-Out, you know, an ice-cold root beer, you know, when I'm really thirsty. And so if I can sense appreciation for all those things, my relational circuits are on right now. Right?
You got it.
Which is a really good thing for a radio talk show host, by the way. Quick break. We'll continue with Ed Curry and Dr. Jim Wilder and the Heart and Soul Conference that Ed will be speaking at, along with Dave Tackle and others, is going to be at the end of June. Get more information on that at joytothrive.com. Also coming up on Thursday night, June 28th, there's a dinner I'll be emceeing. It's honoring the work of Dallas Willard and his wife, Jane. Get more information at joy2thrive.com, joytothrive.com, and would love to see you there. Quick break. We'll continue with Ed and Jim Wilder here on the Frank Pastore Show with a ton of joy.
Heart and soul, I fell in love with you, heart and soul, the way a fool would do.
Welcome back to the Frank Pastore Show, and joining me is Dr. Jim Wilder in studio and Ed Curry by phone, and they will both be speaking along with others at the Heart and Soul Conference coming up at the end of June. Now, here's why I love this stuff, and I'm just learning about it like you guys are a lot. Well, not Jim and Ed, but I mean those of you listening. Joy is incredibly central to our health and our relationship with not only the Lord but other people. In fact, Jim is rapidly becoming an expert, or is already acknowledged as an expert, in something known as neurotheology, which is blending the biblical wisdom and what is taught in Scripture with what we know from brain science, and hence neurotheology, right? And our relationship with God is rooted and stems from joy. Our relationship with others roots in joy. And in having been a Christian counselor for almost 40 years now, Jim Wilder's realized that he has been most successful in helping people with addictions and dealing with trauma, in helping them return back to joy. So he's put this whole curriculum together, and it's really changing the way in which counseling even operates. In fact, Ed Curry and Jim Wilder and the curriculum that they put together is actually having a huge impact on the way in which counseling is being performed and conducted. And when you raise the question at these conferences on what's the future of therapy and those things, their model is is being suggested and being looked at. In fact, Ed, Jim was telling me that you're a former cop, and some of the quieting techniques that you would use with couples who were fighting in a, quote, a domestic disturbance, right, are some of the tactics and strategies that you've written up in this curriculum. Tell me more on that.
Well, that's pretty different. You know, one of the things that people need to calm is to know somebody's glad to be with them and that will kind of synchronize with their distress. So one of the things that family fights in really bad situations is if you can just let people know that you're there, you're glad to be with them, you're willing to listen, you're willing to hear, and you're not going to judge them. It has an amazing, I just would see people calm down. If I could just let them talk, just let them get it out, 9 times out of 10, they would decelerate on their own. Bad cops usually thought they had to be King Kong and make everybody behave. But usually, if you could just let people talk for a while,
yeah,
they'd be cool.
So that's what Ed was telling me about. He used these techniques to keep his own relational circuits on because the bad cops that he was with, when he'd see the thing getting really out of hand, they had their relational circuits off, and they're just going to make this thing stop. They're going to be, you know, the powerhouse right there, and someone's likely to get hit or shot. Whereas if you can stay with your relational circuits, you have options, right? And Ed has been helping other people develop those options in their own life, like when they're facing those lonely times. It doesn't have to just be about conflict.
All right, so Ed, you're speaking at this Heart and Soul conference along with Jim Wilder and others. And what kind of stuff are you guys going to be addressing at this thing? Because I want my listeners to understand what's available to them if they'll just go to the website and check it out. This, it's not only changing counseling, it's changing how we do relationships. It's how we understand better not only ourselves, but how we do family and how we do parenting. And it's just insights, again, from brain science and counseling and this whole neurotheology thing. I'm a big fan. So give me something that the listener tonight can begin to implement in their lives and bring about some change.
Well, I think, like, as for tonight, if you're just sitting in a car and you're wondering, what can I do when I get home? One of the absolute simplest things that you can do is start making a list of times and moments in your life that you felt connected with God really strongly, and times in your life that you have moments you strongly, strongly appreciate. Like I said before, the more you meditate on those things, the more those original feelings come back, and they tend to kickstart the relational part of your brain. And it works that way with relationship with God. We call those moments five-bar moments because, like, you get 5 bars on your cell phone when you get a good signal.
Right.
Those moments are 5-bar moments with God because you had such a great connection with him. It's like you could sense how happy he was to be with you. It was just one of those, aha, God loves me moments.
Yes.
Well, those 5-bar moments are great ways to start having a conversation with God, because those moments, the more you think about them, kind of preheat the relational circuits of your brain.
Right.
So you are totally ready to engage with God and start to interact with him.
Well, and I'm thinking, as you're saying that, Ed, all of these, you know, stories in the Old Testament where the nation of Israel was told to build an altar because God met us here. You know, and that way exactly. You would remember, et cetera. And that's a template for us in our own lives. When we feel distant from God, you know, the phrase is who moved. Mm-hmm. Well, we re-enter into that by remembering times in which God was active in our lives and we were aware of it, mm-hmm. and we deeply appreciated it.
Exactly. God just wasn't interested in little historical, you know, battlefield monuments. He wanted the people to know that at that place, at that time, God showed up and everything changed. He wanted the people to live with that constant remembrance, because the more they remember and think about that stuff, the more it changed how they felt now, and their futures became different.
All right, so listen, Ed, this is gold now. Someone's listening right now, maybe a lot of people, who feel distant from God. They feel as though their prayers are bouncing off the ceiling. They feel alienated. They know they're not as close as they used to be in their lives. What's your advice to them tonight to, quote, return to that place, to remember that memorial of their own lives? How do they do that? What would your advice be to them, Ed?
Well, the first thing I'd say is God remembers all those really good moments, even if they can't remember. I think those are written down in heaven someplace because God celebrates them. So the first thing I would suggest is they ask God to help them remember. I think that's really important. The second thing is I pay attention to see what comes to mind. Because I think God loves to answer prayers like, hey, God, it's like when I'm with Jim, we talk about, hey, Jim, you remember the Zodiac, right? And we both laugh.
Yes.
Well, God remembers those moments and he says, hey, do you remember that time on the Rock of Gibraltar? And I'm like, yeah, I do, God. Wasn't that a blast? So asking him to help you remember and then paying attention to what starts to percolate, what starts to come up is really helpful.
And I'd say say it out loud or write it down, because otherwise it just stays in a little corner of your brain. You say it out loud or you write it down and it starts spreading out other places. You go, yeah.
Now, see, the thing, Ed, we got to say goodbye to you, but this is just gold stuff. I can't wait for you to get back here to Los Angeles so that I can have you in studio and we can talk further about this. But, folks, did you hear what he just said? That our relational circuits are rooted in appreciation. If you can't appreciate something, then you're isolated, and, of course, then you're fodder for the enemy and addictive behavior. So the first thing you do is appreciate something. When it comes to, say, your relationship with God, you've got to get back to appreciating God in your life. And remember when he was active, just like when you get friends together and you remember stories like Jim and Ed and the Zodiac, you know, or your favorite story with your buddies or your friends, right? Same sense of appreciation. God hasn't moved. We just can't remember that. And the path to health and the path to restoring that intimacy with God begins with appreciating how he has acted in our lives in the past and praying, God, show me, remind me of those times in which we were walking closely together. Quick break. We'll continue with Dr. Jim Wilder here at the intersection of faith and reason. Again, everything we're talking about is available online at joytothrive.com. Not only the Heart and Soul Conference coming up at the end of June, but the very special dinner honoring Dallas Willard and his wife Jane. That'll be Thursday night, June 28th. More information on that as well. I'll be the MC at joytothrive.com. Quick break. We'll continue straight ahead here at the intersection of faith and reason. All right, 99.5 KKLA FM Los Angeles, the intersection of faith and reason right here at the Frank Pastore Show. And welcome aboard. I am just learning this stuff for the first time, and I'm getting a little better at it, according to Dr. Wilder. But this is so key. It gives you so much insight into your own life and how you relate to God and how you relate to your friends and or lack thereof. Or I was just telling Jim off the air that I'm reflecting back on my own childhood, on such an emotionally sterile environment it was. Mom and Dad had this Cold War thing going on. I was an only child. We moved all the time. I was always a new kid in school. And it's just, this is why I poured myself into, you know, building models constantly and just trying to entertain myself. And that led into, okay, an addiction to tobacco and dipping and all kinds of things. And now I sort of understand, okay, that was a defense mechanism that I developed as a placebo or a replacement because of the lack of joy that was in my life. And so when you combine that with the, you know, 40 plus years of experience that Dr. Wilder has had in helping people overcome trauma and dealing with addictions and that, it's all rooted in joy. And Doc, if I get this right now, correct me if I'm wrong, it's if you begin with the ability to appreciate something that has happened in your life, even something as silly as you with mangoes, you know, or my grandson Michael smiling at me. If you can begin there, that starts your relational circuits to be on. And once your relational circuits are on, then you can communicate and connect with other people like your spouse or your kids or your friends, etc. And certainly your relational circuits with God work the same way. But it roots in appreciation and joy. So I want you to lay out the role that joy plays in, well, a healthy individual, that if their joy tank is filled, if they live and sustain a high joy environment, they're not nearly as susceptible to all these addictive behaviors. I would imagine there's, quote, healthy people, which means they have a lot of joy relationships in their life, that are wondering, what's the big deal with addictions? How could anyone get addicted to cocaine or, you know, whiskey or whatever it would be? Because they're just not vulnerable to that. Is that true?
Yeah, the addictions really look really good when you're on a low joy environment. Your brain really, really has two things it can run on. It can either run on something like joy that's positive and a desire-based thing, or it can run on fear. And what we find most people is they're actually running their brain on fear, which is in the back of the brain. Then they're easy to go into becoming T-Rex if they're upset. And so to move yourself to the front of the brain, to things you desire, are really, really very important. So take the honeybee. It's born with a one nerve that goes all around its brain. That when it's first comes out and starts flying around, first hatched, I guess you'd say, that nerve fires to sugar. But within 1 week, it has stopped firing to sugar, and it now fires every time it sees a color. The color of whatever flowers it were that had sugar. So it has taken over the initial response from sugar seeking to now being color seeking. So that's why you get these little bees running around your can of soda or whatever it is, and they'll fly around. They go, you're not getting anything out of here. But they are now hooked on color, you see. And our circuits, when we're born, are looking for mom and dad and others to love us and bring us joy and smile at us. And when that isn't around, the little brain circuits in there are going, oh, where is this? Where is this? I don't know. Oh, there's something that gives me a little buzz. And we switch over. And so we've got to move our brains back from cravings. You know, cravings are really intensely important to God. There's actually a verse about cravings in Numbers chapter 11, verse 4. Talking about people gave in to intense cravings out in the wilderness, and they were actually food cravings. And as a result, God killed many of them in the desert. You know, you think about it, there aren't a lot of stories about God killing people because they were stealing or doing other things like that. But he left a lot of people in the desert because they gave in, they couldn't handle their cravings, and so they complained about the stuff that God had given them in their life. You have to read that. That in fact, at the end of that chapter, it talks about the place was named Graves of Craving because that's where they buried all the people who had given in to cravings in the desert. So, you know, if you think about it, the original sin was what? A food craving. So, you know, and I think about Christians who look down on people who smoke marijuana. Well, it turns out that what makes you crave food is your body fat cells are making endocannabinoids. That's your body's own marijuana. So if you start building up fat cells, they start creating a marijuana and a marijuana urge inside of you, and that's why you eat. You've heard of people getting the munchies when they smoked marijuana.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. And so, you know, we like to think about people, those people have got bad cravings, but mine are okay. No, all of our cravings are substitutes for the fact that we need more love and joy in our lives. That's what your brain is really wired for. And so when we get it back on track and say, here's what we really need to do, let me look for the people. I mean, one of the things we do in our Thriving Recovery course, which we do in classes, we make you make a map of everybody in your life. Who are the people I see every day, every week? And which ones of them are a source of joy? How are you going to get three times more contact with those people this week than you did last week? So you're actually building intentionally the amount of joy in your life.
All right, so let's go slow on this. Wait. I've never done that, but that sounds really interesting. So map out all the people that you daily come into contact with.
Right.
And then do you rate them on a joy scale kind of thing, on a 1 to 10 thing?
You could, but, you know, when you think about it, it'll be pretty much plus or minus. This person, when I see them every day, we never get any joy, you know?
Okay.
This person over here, yeah, that's someone who'll smile at me. I get joy, and it's pretty simple.
And then the intent would be, okay, how can I increase the amount of time that I have with, quote, the joy people and avoid the non-joy people?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's just triple the amount of joy you get in a week by just increasing the number of times you call, you stop by, and you see those people. It's not that hard to do.
All right, so what happens then when people have done this?
Well, what happens then is you begin to have this sense of sort of joy and satisfaction inside, and you learn that when your cravings kick in, and this is the other thing you have to watch for, you know, can you notice that you're having a craving? Because most of the time, they just scoot by under the radar. You know, I'm just clicking the remote. And, you know, I don't notice that I'm having a craving, or I'm just thinking to myself, I wonder if I could get, you know, stop off the freeway on the way and we'll pick up a this or that. You know, I just never notice that it's a craving. So if I notice it's a craving, I go, wow, okay, I'm trying to get back in control of this area of my life. You know, I'm going to try to stop looking at women. Well, this is one of my friends. He's out jogging, right? And he jogs by the beach, so he sees these girls out there looking fine.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a Christian man. He says, I don't want to keep thinking these thoughts, you know, these lustful thoughts, right? He's got cravings, really, is what it is.
Okay.
He's craving all these women around there. So he said, okay, I'm going to get my relational circuits on. I'm going to think about the things that I appreciate. And while I'm jogging, I'll intentionally, every time I start getting these cravings, I'll see what'll happen if I get my relational circuits on. I remember those times that were important to me, those times I was connected to God and others. And he found out that within 30 seconds of doing that, he could reliably make the cravings go from unmanageable down to where they're just a really kind of a low roar. I mean, just he notices that that's there, and he could look, but he's not fighting, white knuckling, trying to look away or try to keep a pure thought or stuff like that.
Yeah,
simply just because he has his relational circuits back on.
All right, I'm thinking back. I got to do a break here in a second, but I'm thinking back. I was big time addicted to chewing tobacco. Levi Garrett, Skoal Kodiak, I mean the whole thing, and then that morphed into cigars, etc. And when I had a craving, your advice to me would be what? It's like, I really want right now a cigar. I really want a dip. What would you tell me?
Okay. Well, I would start saying that you have to prepare yourself for that by building the ability to feel joy on demand. You now know how to get whatever the buzz is you're going to get from tobacco on demand. If I ask you, how do you get it? You go, well, just this, and this.
Yeah, yeah.
If I said, okay, how do you get joy on demand? Your brain is blank. You go, like, I don't know. Right?
Right.
So, again, these things.
Joy on demand.
That's right.
Okay,
you want to be able to fire it up when you need it. Otherwise, what's the point,
all right?
Let's take
a break. You'll come back. I want to get into the joy on demand thing, because I think for anyone listening, whether it's tobacco or food or fill in the blank, we've all experienced cravings. So if we understand a little bit better how the brain works, and we're aware of when that craving overcomes us, and Dr. Wilder can give us some skills to address that situation and have joy on demand, you're saying, Jim, that it's successful. If you can get joy on demand, you all of a sudden can make that craving tolerable, and pretty soon it will subside within moments.
It takes a little training to get there, but you can.
All right, let's talk about that. And we will straight ahead as we continue right here at the intersection of faith and reason. By the way, everything we're talking about with Dr. Jim Wilder from the Shepherd's House Christian Counseling Center is available online at joytothrive.com. That's joy, the number 2, thrive.com. There's also a conference coming up at the end of June. There's a dinner with Dallas Willard and his wife Jane. More information on that, all available at the website joytothrive.com. Quick break. We'll continue with Jim Wilder here on the Frank Pastore Show, and we're going to learn about joy on demand. I'm picking up good vibrations. Now, see, that's a whole nother issue. Dr. Wilder probably has a whole deep perspective on the Beach Boys and Good Vibrations. Anyway, we'll get into that. Welcome back to the Frank Pastore Show. Jim Wilder is a clinical psychologist, PhD Fuller back in 1977, has been a Christian counselor since then, and has really developed a whole model in which we can thrive spiritually, relationally, in every element of our lives. He's got a ton of expertise in helping people deal with trauma and addiction, and this has inspired other people as well, and he's joined with them. And in fact, there's a conference coming up at the end of June, the Heart and Soul Conference out at La Cañada Presbyterian Church. There's a special dinner I'll be emceeing on Thursday night, June 28th, honoring Dallas Willard and his wife, Jane. Get all the information and plus all the stuff that we're talking about here on the show at joy2thrive.com, joy2thrive.com. Now, one of the things that Jim said a moment ago that was just really interesting is that if you are able to throw the switch on to where you can get joy on demand, then you got a pretty good shot at addressing the cravings that overcome you. And just to step back for a moment, all of the cravings, the stuff that we want, I mean, ultimately roots in being deprived of key relationships in childhood. And so if you didn't get nurtured right from mom and dad, extended family, if there's not a lot of joy in your home, you'll fill it with replacements. And Ed Curry was with us earlier today, and he says, you know, you'll fill it with all of these things, from changing certain behaviors to events and experiences and persons and substances and his beeps, he calls them. And this is because our brain is wired for joy, and if we're not going to get joy out of meaningful relationships, we're going to try to get it elsewhere. And that's where all the Well, the posers, the imposters come in. Now, Jim, how do we get joy on demand? And, of course, I know you got this curriculum written up. And it's in books and tapes and DVDs and all this stuff. But give me just a couple things that people tonight can learn to, okay, maybe get joy on demand.
All right. The thing we need to remember with joy is it's someone is glad to be with me. I'm glad to be with them. That's what joy actually is. And so if you're looking for that, you're going to find it in your memories. The memories of times and places when somebody or God, which is a somebody, was glad to be with you. That you had the sense that someone just smiled at you. You can. I remember one lady we had who had like no people in her life. We asked her, actually got her to go to an old folks home where there are all these people with Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And she could walk in there and a bunch of them would smile at her. And she'd walk out the door and they wouldn't remember her when she walked in 5 minutes later. And they'd smile again. And she would just build joy that way. But any place in the world where you have a joy in your memory, and again, asking God to help you revive those and writing, make down a list. If I stop and think about it and I just focus on what did it feel like in my body when I was at that joyful place. See, the key is you have to have your body sensation that goes with it, because your body sensation is what causes the cravings. See, there's a part of your brain called the insula. If we took and knocked that out of your brain, you would immediately stop all cravings for tobacco.
Really?
You just look at them and you couldn't care less. And that's the part of your brain that remembers how your body feels. And so it's again, very closely attached to the brain's joy circuits, and it processes what our body is feeling. So we have to get that feeling in our body. What does it like? So just ask you, your grandson you mentioned before,
yes,
right?
Yes, Michael. Yeah. Okay,
when was the last time you saw him and you enjoyed it?
Oh, which is the last time I saw him, which was on Saturday.
Okay, give me a name for that, an interaction with him.
Smile.
Smile, all right? So just sit and think smile, all right? Take a few seconds there, and you'll find that your brain is starting to bring instant joy, right?
Yes.
It's back there now, and it's not as strong as if he was actually there doing it.
Right.
But I have a bunch of photographs that I look at. They're all joy moments. I got a collection of them instead of collecting whatever else. All I got to do is go to my computer, start looking at my pictures. I got the joy collection right there. All of these things that we do that we can just do to trigger our joy. And more importantly, if we've never really found people to be glad to be with us, we have the option of being able to encounter God in a way that will bring us joy if we could just get our minds to connect with him some way or another. And that's one of the things that we tried to do with everybody who came into counseling, teach them, how do you connect with God so you can have joy? Mm-hmm. And I, one of our people that worked on staff was David Tackle. I asked him, you know, David, could you just develop a program for us that would help people connect with God in a meaningful way? Everybody that we have come in here has got to get a better connection with God.
Right.
Could you develop something like that for us? And David has spent his time doing that and actually came up with some very specific ways to help people encounter God, sort of, again, on demand when you need him.
All right. So, Dave Tackle, welcome to the Frank Pastore Show. And as Jim Wilder was just saying, talk to me about appreciating that or realizing that God has always been happy to be with me, even though we don't may not even be aware of that.
Well, that's a wonderful discovery. You know, once we learn how to connect with God, know that he's with us, appreciate his presence with us, it changes everything we ever thought we knew about the Christian life. But we discovered in trying to help people with this that there's some amazing challenges. I mean, let me just pose a question. Imagine God thinking about you. What do you suppose comes to mind? And how does he feel as he regards you?
Honestly?
Yeah.
Disappointment was the first thing that crossed my mind.
There you go.
Was like, I could be so much better and I'm falling short.
And probably 4 out of 5 Christians would agree with you.
Really?
Yes. And this is a huge problem. Somehow we've missed the whole heart of God. Because here we have a Savior who would rather die than live without us. And we think he's mad at us.
Mm.
Where does that come from? And so the first thing we need to do is to help people correct their perceptions of who God is and what he wants in their life, how he wants to deal with them.
See, all right, so Dave, hold on. I got to take a break. When we come back, I want to delve into this because that's fascinating. Because I gave what you said is 80% of the time the answer that Christians give when asked, okay, if God is thinking about you, what's he, I mean, give me the emotion. And the first thing that crossed my mind was disappointment. Now, there's probably wonderful pathologies in my background as to why that's the case. And when we come back, we're going to have Dave Tackle sort of address that question, because he's exactly right when you pause and think about it. I mean, if he's willing to send his son, who will voluntarily die in order to be with us forever, why would he be disappointed? It's like me thinking about my grandson, Michael. When I think about Michael, it's like incredible joy. I'm just happy to be with him. God has that same attitude on us. You know how heartbroken I would be if Michael, when he's older, and they said, okay, think about Grandpa thinking about you. What's the first thing? I would be crushed if the emotion was that he said, oh, yeah, Grandpa's always disappointed in me. No way. You're my grandson. I love you. And that's how God views us. Quick break. We'll continue with Dave Tackle and Jim Wilder here at the intersection of faith and reason. This is very cool. Very cool. All right, welcome back to the Frank Pass Story Show. And joining me in studio is Dr. Jim Wilder and David Tackle by phone. David Tackle got an MDiv out of Fuller. He's an expert on spiritual formation, former computer programmer, kind of linear engineer, kind of geeky guy. And as a Christian, was in a very legalistic, structured relationship with not only family members, but especially with God, and found out that there was no joy in his life. So he stumbles via Dallas Willard into spiritual formation stuff and Wilder stuff with the role of joy and how to thrive. And all of a sudden, it has completely revitalized his whole spiritual life. And he wants to be able to teach those skills to others. I just had one of those aha moments, and I walked right into it. So let me ask you guys that are listening. All right, if God were thinking of you right now, pick one word to describe what his emotion in thinking of you would be. All right, so when Tackle asked me that, I said, and I'm trying to be as honest and transparent like always, right? So I said, disappointment. And then bingo, he said 80% of Christians answered the same way. That they believe when God is thinking of them, that the overwhelming emotion he would have would be disappointment. Now, the reality is, think of your grandkids. Like when I think of my grandson, Michael. If I overheard or found out that when Michael was asked, you know, when Grandpa thinks of you, what's the word that, you know, describes Grandpa's emotions? If he said disappointment, you know how crushed I would be? I mean, my eyes are welling up with tears just thinking about it. It's like, oh, Grant, are you kidding me? You're Michael. There's nothing you could ever do to make me stop loving you. No matter what you do, I love you. Don't ever think I'm disappointed in you. I want you to make better choices at times, but I'm never disappointed. I love you. And the point is, that's exactly how God views us. So, David Tackle, I think I'm sort of getting this, at least this first step.
Yeah, see, you hit the nail on the head there, that if your grandson had come to that conclusion, he would have completely missed your heart.
Right.
And this is the problem we have with God. See, the Bible portrays God as incredibly generous. You know, look at Isaiah 55. Come to me, all you, you know, if you thirsty or hungry, and take part in this massive banquet. Delight yourself in rich food. This is a generous God. Jesus says, come to me, those of you who are thirsty, those of you who are hungry. All you who are weary and heavy laden.
Right.
If all the weary and broken people come to Jesus, and then he says, how come you're so weary and broken? I mean, that wouldn't make any sense. See, he's not disappointed. He rejoices when tired and worn out people come to him and say, look, my life's not working very well, and I need your help. Because that's what he does best.
All right, so David, I'm thinking here. If I were to have this conversation with Michael, say he was, I don't know, 8, you know, old enough to where it should be taken very seriously on his thoughts, right? And he said, you know, when Grandpa thinks of me, the word would be disappointment. I would be so crushed, I would do everything in my power to convince him that that's not the case. So now, here we are in the Christian life. And those of us in positions of influence, right?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like our big role then is to help people get an accurate picture, an accurate vision of who God is, that yes. We've missed it.
Yes. So for one, a starting point would just be we need to preach this from the pulpits. We need to talk about it. We need to share stories about it. We need to remind ourselves that God is in love with us, that he rejoices over us, and he wants to be with us. Now, one of the reasons this is so hard for people to comprehend is we have so very little direct experience of God. Most of our teaching centers around what you're supposed to do as a Christian.
Right.
And you know, here's the list of rules. This is what good morality looks like. Here's a set of ethics. Now go try hard to live the Christian lifestyle. That's not a relationship. Okay, that's an arrangement. What we need is to learn what does it mean to have a relationship, something that's tangible, conscious, workable, that actually means something to me. How do I connect with this God?
So it would be equivalent to Michael asking, okay, so how do I be a grandson? What am I supposed to do to be a grandson?
Right.
And it's like, no, you just are. That's who you are. Realize exactly. Who you are. It's not to go do and prove that you're a grandson. There's nothing you could do to prove it. You know, exactly. Act like a grandson. You are a grandson.
Exactly. All you have to do is show up and engage.
So, okay? David, this is a big moment for a lot of people who are hearing this for the first time. And, of course, it's resonating with me because I'm familiar with Dallas Willard's stuff and, mm-hmm. and the Divine Conspiracy, as I know you are as well. Mm-hmm. But this sounds to be like the first step in spiritual formation is getting an accurate picture of who God is. And it tethers very nicely with what Dr. Wilder was talking about with appreciation. If you understand that God is thrilled to spend time with you the mm-hmm. same way that I am with my grandson, that he's not at all disappointed. It's joy. Mm-hmm. And that joy, that the God is filled with joy when he thinks about you, that's the first step.
Yes. I remember a number of years ago, I was at a conference, and Dallas Willard suggested a little exercise. And what he said was, okay, here's what you do. Simple process. Every morning as you're waking up, every night as you're drifting off to sleep, take 5 or 10 minutes and just let your mind drift toward the goodness of God. Think of his good heart, his generosity, his love, and just focus on that. And I'm sitting here in the audience thinking, well, that doesn't sound like that'll do any good.
Right.
But Dallas Willard must know what he's talking about. I'm going to give this a try. I was shocked. Within 3 weeks, I began to expect the goodness of God in my life in ways that I had not anticipated before. This it makes a difference. If you spend time appreciating God, your heart gets trained to expect him to be good.
Now, how frustrating, now this is in your area of expertise, but I'm having some of these thoughts for the first time, right? So like this one, how frustrating it must be for him who grants us free will, who knows the very best thing for us is for us to enjoy and revel in his presence and be aware of it. But if he shows up in his full Shekinah glory, it like blows our free will goodbye, right?
Right.
So he has to veil himself just a little bit. If you seek me, you can find me kind of thing.
Right.
And it's got to frustrate him in the appropriate sense on, oh, children, I love you. It'd be like Michael not being aware of how much I love him. And I can't overwhelm him, just pick him up in my arms, you know what I mean? He's got to sort of choose to want to be with me, and he's not making that choice. How frustrating it would be.
Yeah, and we actually have a great picture of that in the New Testament. When Jesus comes to Jerusalem, and he falls down, and he weeps over the city, and says, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how often I would have gathered you together, but you wouldn't come.
Mm.
This is a God's broken heart over our refusal to acknowledge his love. And we need to change our whole perception of the Christian life. It isn't some kind of test where we have to prove that we're good enough or that we're responding well enough. This is a relationship that we need to learn how to engage in.
All right, so David Tackle, you're telling me that this really changed your life back when you were in the audience hearing Dallas Willard say something like that. Is this way before you decided to go do an M. David Fuller and, you know, pursue this professionally? Did this, you know, what were you doing? Who were you? What were you doing when you heard that?
Well, actually, it got kind of, the change for me predates that some. I was one of these laypersons that every pastor loves to have in his congregation because I do everything. You know, I could teach Sunday school. I could fill in for the pastor. You know, I know a lot of theology. This is the kind of layperson everybody wants to have.
And you were cheap. Yes.
But here's the deal.
Right.
The more I learned and the more I studied, the bigger the gap I saw between what was in the New Testament and what was in my own heart.
Mm.
And this gap just keeps getting bigger year after year. And there's something wrong here. You know, I'm doing all the right stuff, and it's not changing who I am. And one day, I learned how to engage with God and listen to his voice. See, this is key. I was taught from day one that God quit talking at the end of the first century. And this is just absolute foolishness. If you look at the New Testament, Jesus says, especially in John 14, 15, 16, and 17, he says, look, I've been training you for 3 years, but the training's not over. And I'm going to send someone to pick up where I left off.
Right.
And you just need to learn how to engage with this new mentor, and he'll just keep right on teaching you. Well, once I learned how to hear God's voice, and he started speaking into the broken places in my life, and those places, once you speak truth and light into a dark place, it just blows it out of the water. And old resentments and old wounds and old pain started to evaporate. I had a depression that lifted that I didn't even know I had.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, oh, my gosh, if God can do this, I need to change careers.
Yes.
So I quit my job and I went to seminary.
Awesome.
So
what are you doing now? I mean, I know you're speaking at the Heart and Soul Conference coming up at the end of June, but how do you, what's your paying day gig, you know?
Well, I'm severely underemployed right now.
But I'm still filled with joy, yes.
Is pull together resources to help other people across this bridge between performance Christianity and one that's based on relationship.
Yes.
And I'm just counting on God to, make this livable over the long haul.
Well, David Tackle, if you ever get out here in Los Angeles, I would love to have you here in studio. And we can talk about this more deeply, because if people just get one thing from what we were saying, it's that when God thinks of you, it is joy. And he wants to spend time with you in the same way that I want to spend time with my grandson, and it's immediate joy. And how crushed I would be to hear that my grandson, when he thought of, you know, what does grandpa think of you? And he said disappointment, I would be crushed. Well, God's crushed. When people believe false things about him and they believe all these bad things about God, that's not who he is. And we have added all of these different layers and performance, et cetera. And it'd be like Michael trying to say, okay, what do I got to do to be a grandson? You know, I want to act like a grandson. It's like, no, dude, you are a grandson. And yeah, you might be making some harmful choices. And imagine how crushed I would be if he were doing something that was hurting himself and he didn't know what caused it, you know? And it'd be like, I would do everything to try to help him get healthy. Well, that's how God views a lot of the things that we encumber our lives with. Dave Tackle, great stuff. We're going to come back, continue with Dr. Jim Wilder. By the way, that conference, as well as the very special dinner for Dallas Willard and his wife, Jane, you can get information on those. They're at the end of June at the website, joy2thrive.com. That's joy2thrive.com. And would love to see you there. Quick break. We'll continue straight ahead. All right, 99.5 KKLA FM Los Angeles, Spring Best Story Show. Welcome back. This is very cool now. All right, so I think the best picture that I could do right now, the best bang for the buck, is to paint this picture for you. All right, and I was just mentioning it a moment ago, but this is just so good, right? So most of us feel as though God is distant in our lives. And of course, we all know the old line, you know, who moved, right? All right, think about this for a moment. When I think about my grandson, Michael, who turns 3 next month in a couple weeks, right? I just get overwhelmed and flooded with joy. If I heard that if Michael were asked, you know, when grandpa thinks about you, what do you think grandpa feels about you? You know what I mean? And if he said disappointment, I would be crushed. In the very same way that God is crushed when we think and view him as having disappointment when he thinks of us. And we have this view of him as being legalistic and performance oriented and all that, much like Michael saying, you know, okay, so grandpa, how do I act like a grandson? I know you are a grandson. Same thing in the Christian life. It's not go act like a Christian. You are a Christian. It's far more relational than task and performance oriented. You know my drift? All right. So that is the beginning of getting an accurate vision of who God is and appreciating him and realizing that he appreciates us. And this now launches you in the whole realm of spiritual formation. Now, the other flip side of this, or the tandem parallel side of this, is what's called neurotheology. You take the latest that we know about brain science, right? How the brain develops, how it's firing, what chemicals are going where, what parts of the brain are, you know, light up at certain times. And you can track joy and disappointment, all these other emotions. This is an area of expertise that Dr. Jim Wilder's involved in. It's neurotheology. You take all the brain science stuff, and it at the intersection of brain science and theology is neurotheology. And so, Jim, you've seen, I'm sure people have been wired up, and you've gone through the joy exercises or the appreciation skills or the other things, and you see certain areas light up and other places go dormant, and you've actually seen how the brain fires all this.
Well, we've got to actually look at a lot of different scientific studies to put all of this stuff together, because you know, there isn't a lot of direct research of people connecting with God and watching what happens to their brain under those conditions. Just the price of the research has been a little bit prohibitive there. But we have the pictures of what happens for people who haven't had these experiences with God. We've had people who've meditated, and every once in a while we get somebody who's got a change. You know, what happened when I encountered God? And there you see the shift, not with a brain scan in one case, but with brain waves. Studying with the brain waves, all the activity was in the back of the brain. The trauma resolved. They experienced God in their life. All the activity moved up to the front and the joy center the way it should be. There's some really fascinating pictures that you could look at on the link there. I heard on the Pastore show, I put a link on there for a neurotheology of sexual addiction. And there you can actually look at how this applies to the brain. See, watch some brain scans that are related to sexual addiction. That one was done by Daryl Brazel. He's a pastor working with sexual addiction out of, I believe it's Kansas, but he's working with our stuff. There's a video there that says Wired for Relationship by Ed Corey. And you'll see how that applies with various addictions. And the interesting thing about addictions is that center where the relational center.
Yeah.
Is dead. It's offline. It's quiet. It's actually not physically dead, but it's just not active. It's turned off in the people who've got low joy, and they're not connected with God. It's interesting just about that little joy center. It neurologically, it's the equivalent of three faces looking at each other.
Really?
And so the part of your brain that thinks of itself as you, you could say is three of us or one of us, depending on which way you wanted to do it. It's like a trinity, you see. And it's interesting that our identity is three in one. And where have you heard that before?
Uh-huh.
Right? Well, that's the part that's off. That's the part that's dead. That's what we're talking about. Your joy, your relational circuits are off. And again, if you want to look at how that applies with trauma and psychiatric illnesses, there's a connection on there, a book and a video by Carl Lehman, who does the Emmanuel process. He's basically teaching people how, when your brain has been traumatized by bad experiences, how do you get it back connected with God again? Because
right.
Instead of going to God, you just go to fear. You know, you said that 80% of the people think that God's disappointed, or Ed said
that's
that.
That's what I said, right? Yeah, that's what Ed said, yeah.
Right. Well, the other 20 think that God are mad at him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's like he's disappointed or he's mad at me. Almost nobody thinks God's going to be glad to be with me. It's like, oh, no, he's going to slap my face. And so all of these images, when we go to connect with God, they all come pouring in. And Carl Lehman, who's also going to be here for the Heart and Soul Conference, he's got, you know, videos and books. It's called Outsmarting Yourself, how to basically teach your brain to get your relational circuits going on. So whether it's addictions or Ed Corey's relational for addiction stuff,
mm-hmm.
or David Tackle, you're just listening to, he developed a whole course on forming. It's actually designed for churches. All of these courses are designed for churches so that your church gets together and begins to be a place where we learn to have joy with each other. Can you imagine that, a church where we had joy with each other, where people said, where do I go for joy? Oh, I go to for church, man. Because that isn't how church generally happens, is it? Or how do I go to really experience God? And we actually teach people to sit together in groups and figure out together why it is that I'm not experiencing God as being glad to be with me, so that together as a group we can get all of ourselves back to joy. Because sometimes, you know, you're just bummed and you can't do it by yourself.
All right, so
we need to do this together.
All right, so pull back one layer for a second, though. I'm thinking All right, God in his foreknowledge would know that this would be our environment, and this would be the circumstance in which we're in, that we've exercised free will, we're separated from him in rebellion, that the difficulty is going to be that we have the wrong vision of who God is, etc. The task that he had then was, okay, how do I reconnect with the people who don't even know that they need me, but I'm the answer for all of their problems, that they're going to turn their relational circuits off and try to fill their joy tank with all this other crud. I'm what they need. How am I going to do that? And of course, that story is the story of the gospel. That's the story of how do I redeem a fallen humanity who've exercised their free will in rebellion, but I love them and they don't know it. You know, and all the lies about, you know, God. I remember Dallas Willard saying, don't believe anything bad about God. Mm-hmm. It's right? So simple, but it's exactly the same thing you and Dave and Ed are saying.
Yeah, the interesting thing, though, is the American theology and philosophy was formed very much by the Puritans that came with the basic understanding that everything in life was a choice. And if you wanted to be joyful, if you wanted to be anything at all, you simply choose to do it and everything will change because you choose it. Turns out, if I decided I was going to choose to read Greek and Hebrew, I wouldn't be able to do it. If I was going to choose to fly, I couldn't do it. I would have to get trained to fly a plane or to do anything else. There's a lot of learning that you have to do. And it's the same way with joy. We can choose things that will help us have that room in our life to connect with God, which is right. What spiritual formation is about. But then it's God that actually does the changing. It's not something that we choose. It's not like, okay, I'm going to fast all day, and then I'll be able to choose how to serve God. No, I'll fast all day so that I'll have some time to encounter God. And when I'm with God, he goes, oh, boom, hey, dude, you know what? Here's something I'd like to rearrange about how you see me. Mm. You know, there used to be inductive Bible studies, you know, yeah. Where you just sit there and kind of look at scripture. Well, you might look at this as an inductive study of God's presence. What happens in your life if you actually experience God being with you? And you know what? Everybody has had an experience of God being with them. Atheists, it doesn't matter. There's times in your life you look back and you go, somebody else was here. Somebody was caring about me. You look at those moments, you go, where? Let me just stop there. Let me go back and revisit that. What was that like? And those are the moments where God is breaking through. He's going to say, you know, it's more than just a choice. It's actually getting to know me. You can make some choices that'll make some room for me.
Yep.
But then I'm going to do all the changing. That's the thing that, whether you're looking at David Tackle's course or any of the people at the Share, at the Heart and Soul Conference, we're actually looking at how do you make those moments for God. And the thing that's different is that we're talking about how do you do that together. I mean, it's not something you just do by yourself anymore.
Right, right.
We
do
actually
it as a group.
Have to do it as a group if we're going to build joy and build maturity. It's time to stop practicing Christianity in isolation, just me and God, just me and Jesus, thank you very much, I don't need you. Because that isn't how he made the world. Right
no.
From the beginning, he says, not good for man to be alone. He says, rejoice with those that rejoice, weep with those that weep. What does that mean other than we're going to have people that are going to be glad to be with us when we're happy? And build our joy, and then when we're sad, they're going to be glad to be with us too and bring us back to joy. That's a simple instruction. Paul just laid it out. A church that did that would change people, whether they knew brain science or not.
Well, and again, think this is why it's called the body of Christ. Mm-hmm. And in that, you know, if people are the problem, then you're the problem. Because the idea is we're to get along and to do this as a group. And, of course, all the spiritual health that comes and the ability to minister to us as individuals, not only to serve, but to be served. And you do it as a group. You know what I mean? And so it all begins to click. Jim, this is great stuff. The conference is coming up at the end of June. Everything that we talked about is available online at joytothrive.com, including information for that dinner honoring Dallas Willard and his wife Jane coming up at the La Cañada Flint Ridge Country Club. Everything that Dr. Wilder and Ed Corey and Dave Tackle were talking about, free downloads on most of that, is at joy2thrive.com. That's joy, the number 2, thrive.com. Great stuff, Jim. Really appreciate it. A quick break. We're going to continue at 99.5 KKLA.